Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including 131 of the best stations in the U.S. and Canada, and XM Channel 158, on Saturday, December 11th, 2010. This is episode 725. Enjoy.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Just back from France to thank my friends at Seismic, Loic Lemur and his wife Geraldine, who put on an amazing conference in France called Le Web.
Le Web.
2010. And, oh man, did we have a good time. It's an interesting idea, this conference, Le Web. The idea is Loic, who is a Frenchman, but moved his company to San Francisco about 4 or 5 years ago, his company Seismic. They do a Twitter client. He noticed there was a significant difference. In fact, the reason he moved to San Francisco, a significant difference in the way startups work in the U.S. and in Europe. And he I think, genuinely feels that the American model works better. I mean, look at all the amazing fertility and creativity coming out of the U.S., particularly out of Northern California, Silicon Valley, and San Francisco. And there's a couple of points that I took from it, meeting European entrepreneurs, speaking to European entrepreneurs. One is that in America, we're allowed to fail. In fact, if you're an entrepreneur and you have a resume, two or three failed startups, it doesn't count against you, especially if they were good tries or good ideas. Maybe the timing was wrong. You couldn't raise enough money. It doesn't count against you. And every entrepreneur I speak to in the States says, it's okay to fail. It means you took a chance. You took a risk. You tried, and it's honored here. Whereas in Europe, very difficult to get money if you have a failed startup. Just not the same culture of, isn't that funny that the thing that makes America successful is our culture of failure? Not quite the right way to say it. Our willingness to take a chance and fail. I thought that was quite interesting. The money tree is a little different in Europe too. It's a little more conservative, a little less easy to raise money, and of course that's what lubricates a lot of this. You can very easily get a startup. I was talking to Dennis Crowley, who started Foursquare, which is 5 million users now, very successful, one of those location check-in things that people like my wife say, why would you ever want to use that? But for some reason us geeks like it. I asked Dennis, well, isn't it fairly easy just to get started? It's cheap. And he said, with the tools today, you know, things like Amazon has a cloud computing system called EC2 and the programming languages like Ruby on Rails that make it very simple and easy for somebody to say, I've got an idea. Let me try it out. Let me put it out in public and see what happens. That makes it very easy for us to create a lot of ideas. But as soon as people start using it, as soon as you start getting 100,000, 200,000, 1 million, 2 million, 3 million users, well, it starts to cost money. And at that point, you've got a successful idea. You've been able to execute. You've been able to show that it works and people like it. Then you go shake the money tree. You go down. There's a road in Palo Alto called Sand Hill Road where all the venture capitalists go. And you go down that road one by one and you raise money. And that's how pretty much every successful startup from Twitter to Facebook has started. And it's that system that's working so well for us and creating so much value in the U.S. They're very interested. The European entrepreneurs are very interested. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number, 888-827-5536. We are live today. Our show notes at techguylabs.com. James DeRuvo is writing as I speak. Techguylabs.com will also take you to our chat room and to the video of this show, should you want to watch. Let's get to our first call of the day. He's Mike in Los Angeles. Mike, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hello, Leo Laporte. How you doing?
Hey, Mike.
Okay, I just got my first smartphone, a Samsung Intercept Droid phone from Virgin Mobile. And now I have three questions for you. You want them all at once?
Let's go one by one.
Okay, the first one has to...
I'm easily confused. Go ahead.
Okay, so some websites are saying, drain it all the way down, charge up 12, 14 hours, do that three times.
No.
Oh, you'll drink
BS.
Battery. No, a lot of people say it doesn't make it.
Doesn't matter one way or the other. Lithium ion batteries. There's a lot of misinformation about batteries, partly because of the nickel cadmium batteries and the nickel metal hydride batteries. And frankly, to a very misleading report from the U.S. Air Force, which everybody's been going on ever since, that were really about a form of NiCads that never were used in consumer electronics. But
trust what you
that's have. All point aside. Lithium ion, it's very straightforward. You don't have to charge it up, charge it down, discharge it. Just, you know, all the phones will say charge it fully before you use it. I don't even bother doing that. It doesn't impact the life. You have a certain number of charge cycles, period. After that, the battery's no good.
Whether it's a cell phone or a laptop, it's the same thing.
They're all lithium ion nowadays. So there's no memory effect. That's one of the things that happened with NiCads, where they would kind of remember how much you used and not charge past that point. That doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
There's some people say, and you know, if you discharge fully, you'll get better battery life once in a while. I don't believe it. I don't do it.
Can you ruin it if you overcharge it, if you leave it plugged?
You cannot. They all, unless you're using a cheap knockoff battery, they all have circuitry. Because one of the problems with lithium ion, if you overcharge them, they explode.
Okay, so let's say.
So they, none of them, you trust me, you can't overcharge it. It would blow up. So you can't, they have circuitry that says, okay, I'm at max and I'm done.
Okay, they're smart enough to know they're full. So I can plug it in. Worry in the morning. It's gonna.
Yeah, don't think about your battery. All that battery management's voodoo.
All right, so don't have to worry about that. Here's the next question. Screen protectors, they're on Amazon, they're there from a penny to 20 bucks. Is there any big difference between one and another, or do you need it?
I don't use a screen protector, but of course, remember, I go through phones like candy.
Yeah, I don't.
So I don't give them. How many years do you want to keep this Samsung?
A couple of years would be nice.
Yeah. I think screen protectors do two things. They dull the screen to make it less attractive. And they make it a little more difficult to use. The modern screens are glass. They don't scratch very easily. They're fairly scratch resistant. They're like your watch, your wristwatch. I don't put a protector on. If you want to use a protector, I don't think there's much difference. I wouldn't get a one penny protector. I don't know who's charging a penny, but that doesn't sound.
They charge you a few dollars for shipping, but
yeah, they get you in one way or the other. I would get a case. I think a case is probably a good idea, but none of the cases protect the front face because that's what you're using.
Right. Okay.
Just be careful. Keep it in a pocket. Don't put it face down on the desk, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I commute by bicycle, and I have all this stuff on my fanny pack, so I've got all sorts of cases. I look like I'm in the Army, kind of, and people make fun of it, but I have stuff hooked on because I don't want to lose things. So it's a big.
I'm told, I didn't know this, but Monoprice, which I recommend for cables.
Who?
My Monoprice. The chat room, thank you, chat room, says Monoprice, MONOPRICE.com, also sells screen protectors. What I love about Monoprice is it's they don't fall for the hype. You know, they sell the cables at the right price, like $1.50, and they sell the screen protectors affordably. And
I'll look at that. Here's my last.
Those are fine.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
There's only so much RAM on there. There's certain programs that start up whether I wanted to or not. No, there's a downloadable app called Advanced Task Killer. And I'll look at that, and Maps has started up, and Huffington Post has started up, but I can't figure out how to stop them from starting up. There's no.
Yeah. The way Android works, there's no quit on most apps. Don't worry about it. The idea is that the operating system takes care of all that for you.
But I don't want to.
You're 2.2 right now of Android, you know?
Fortunately.
Ah, okay. Task killers only work pre 2.2. So you could, the one I recommend is called Watchdog. It's free.
Uh-huh.
Watchdog looks for runaway tasks, programs that don't quit, and then lets you quit them. Once you go to 2.2, you really, their task killers stop working. And here's an interesting thing. Google released 2.3, and many phones are getting upgraded right now. Google put a task killer in it. After saying for years you don't need one. I don't think you particularly need one, but get Watchdog, Mike. It'll at least keep an eye on runaway apps. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme. For high-speed internet at an amazing price, call 866
The number two, GetNet. Yeah, DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Julie, Pasadena, California. You're next. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Leo. I am helping my mother shop for an electronic reader. And I know you're a fan of the Kindle.
Yeah.
She would like one that is illuminated or backlit somehow so that she can read at night in bed without having a lamp on.
Yeah, I do too. I use the iPad for that.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Now, here's the difference. The almost all the e-readers, including Barnes & Noble's, Amazon's. I'm not sure about the new color from Barnes & Noble. I don't think... Is that backlit, chat room? Have you played with that one? They have a new color one. But all the black and white ones are using the same screen, which is from a company called E-Ink.
Okay.
And it has some real advantages. The E-Ink uses no electricity once the page is drawn. So it's like an Etch-a-Sketch. The screen is charged, the little black dots draw the page, and uh-huh. then it sits there and doesn't use any power. So these get 2 or 3 weeks of battery life as a result, because they only use power when you turn the pages. The other advantage is they're very crisp, so when you shine light on them, there's no flicker. They're just sitting there. The disadvantage is it's not exactly black on white.
Right.
It's kind of black on a green. It looks like an LCD screen. It's not great. It's got a little flicker. They've gotten better, but still a perceptible flicker when it redraws a screen, because really what it's doing, that almost like an Etch-a-Sketch. It's erasing the screen and redrawing it, and you can see that. So there's this flicker, and it's not a fast screen. So if you'd want to do anything else, some of these have, like the Amazon Kindle has a browser in it, but it's kind of a weird feeling because it's so slow, and it's not touch. So but people look at it and go, I could touch it. No, you can't touch it. You use the buttons.
Right.
So that's E-Ink. Then you have more traditional LCD screens as you would have on a laptop. That's what the iPad uses. It's backlit, so you don't need a light on it. But as a result, it's not, for some, it's not quite as readable. Certainly not readable in sunlight. She's mostly reading in bed?
Yeah. Yeah, at night. And she wants to be able to not have a lamp on, so...
Yeah, I understand that. Now, the other advantage of the iPad, and I really would kind of underscore this, is does more than just reading. And she may find that she really likes it, that she can get her email on there or visit a website or two. Does she do any computing at all?
Yes, she does.
I think people get an iPad and they go, oh, this is better than I thought. Now, the Nook, I am looking, the Nook Color, which is the new Barnes & Noble, is backlit.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. Okay. So it's color, but it's, which means it's not going to get as good a battery life. It's not going to be as, it's going to have all the disadvantages that any laptop has. Not as good in bright light, that kind of thing. But it is backlit, so she could read it in bed, and it's smaller than an iPad, which people, the reason people like the other reason people like the Amazon is it's so tiny.
Well, what about being able to download books from a library website?
Well, you'd have to check with the library. Most libraries, unfortunately, libraries are not too good at entering the digital age. They put copy protection on these books so that you can use them only for 2 weeks. It's kind of a strange experience. And I would guess, but you'd have to check with the library. In most cases, the library copy protection system is required to do it on a computer, not on an e-reader. So my recommendation, you're going to be buying books. There are a lot of free books that you can read on any of these readers. All the public domain books, all the classics. But my recommendation is she buy books.
Right.
Okay. Check with the library and see, but I bet you, I don't know of any library that allows you to use copy protected books on them.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You're welcome. I hope that helped. At least you understand the parameters now.
We were talking about an iPad, and then I think she thought that maybe that was too much for... She just wanted to keep it simple, you know?
It's bigger. It's really bigger, and I find when I'm lying in bed, and the size of the Nook or the Kindle is great. You can hold it. So I would say, given that she's got, I want backlight, the Nook is probably her choice, and it's got, it's Barnes & Noble. It's got 2 million books. It's got the same kind of select, roughly the same kind of selection as the Amazon.
Okay.
If I were you, now, if you can take her to look at these, it would be good.
Yeah, that's what I recommended to her.
Yeah, she needs to, because she's going to be reading. I gave my mom, who's 77, She has an iPad, and she has a Kindle, and she loves the Kindle. She reads again because she can make the text bigger, easy to read. You can put a bright light on that, you know, and it really is legible. It's really crisp and legible, and no LCD screen, including the Nook, is going to be like that.
And the Kindle, you're restricted to buying books off of Amazon. Is that correct?
Not exactly. There are it supports a format that our other companies put content into, and you can email yourself PDFs and things too. So no, you're not limited to just what's on Amazon, but mostly you are. And for her, probably the easiest will be that. But no, there are programs that will let you put books onto the Kindle.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Julie. Yeah, this is a tough one for shopping. And especially if you're buying it for somebody else, it's hard to say, oh, well, you really ought to. I'll be honest, at $130, the Wi-Fi Kindle is a very attractive device. The price is right. The Kindle is light. It's a really the newest Kindle, the third generation Kindle is, I think, a gorgeous. The first Kindle was really horrible. Like, where did this come from? But the new Kindle is just gorgeous, light, nothing like it, and very, very usable for reading. The other advantage of buying books, Kindle books, is that you can still read them, and I do this, on the iPad, or your computer, or your phone. Amazon makes Kindle applications for all these, and once you buy a book on one platform, you can read it on any of them. You can download it from any of them, and it keeps track of where you are on any of them and catches you up on all the devices. So if you're in the middle of a book and you just launch it on your Android device or your iPhone, it jumps right to the page you left off. I like that feature. I think Amazon's really got it kind of down. They've been doing it for a while. But having said that, I think the Nook is quite good. It's just I don't know why you'd buy the black and white Nook because it's just pretty much the same as the Amazon. But if you're willing to spend $250, the new color Nook, it's a gorgeous screen. I have not played with it. I do see it's backlit. It has built-in Wi-Fi. So you can, you know, download your books without connecting it to a computer. I like that. But I have to think that the battery life is much worse. Don't know if that's an issue. I mean, I charge everything up at night anyway. And that because it's color and backlit, it's just not going to be quite as legible. It's going to be more like an iPad. A small iPad. Justin, Windsor, Nova Scotia. Hey, Justin, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello there, Leo. How's it going?
It's great. How are you, Justin?
Oh, not too bad. Do I sound okay?
Are you on Skype? You sound fantastic.
Oh, that's good. I had to...
I presume you're on Skype.
Yeah, I am. The calling rates up here are insane. But
yeah.
It's also hard to find upstream bandwidth, so, you know.
No, it sounds very good. Of course, that's for now. The problem with Skype is it can be good 1 minute and terrible the next.
Yeah, well, we do have reliable internet, but it's just slow.
Who's your internet service provider?
Eastlink.
Okay. Are they a phone company? The DSL?
Eastlink, they do all three. They do DSL, cable, and phone. They're the most expensive, but they are actually a good provider.
I have to say, it sounds extremely clear. Sounds really good.
Oh, it didn't when I was going through the call screener. Anyway,
well, that's what I mean. It can be great 1 minute and terrible the next.
Yeah. So what I wanted to talk about a bit is net neutrality. And what brought it up for me is one of the news sites that I read. It's Infowars.com. Basically, the news site got partially blocked from Google.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about that. That is a very hot topic, thanks to WikiLeaks. The Department of Homeland Security is now blocking BitTorrent sites. We'll talk about that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm sorry about all the rustling. I'm opening up this Google notebook here, that the Chrome OS notebook. We'll talk about that in a little bit. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. Talking about computers, technology, and the internet. And we were talking with Justin in Windsor, Nova Scotia, about this latest move. And it seems to be the U.S. and, of course, repressive regimes like China that have decided that the best way to control the internet is to selectively turn off sites. Are you being locked in Canada, Justin?
Sorry?
Is it Canada that's doing the blocking? Who's doing the blocking for InfoWars?
Well, the InfoWars.com site, I mean, granted, it's a bit of a conspiracy theorist.
Oh, it's a crazy site. But that's and you know, this is the old adage. The true test of free speech is if you're willing to defend speech that you find personally reprehensible. It's easy to defend free speech if you agree with it. But do you, if you believe in free speech, then you believe in defending the speech that is reprehensible. And so InfoWars isn't reprehensible. It just, to me, seems kind of crackpot. But absolutely, it's the Internet. The point of the Internet is it's a publishing medium that is not censored. So no, in my opinion, no government organization, nobody should have the right to censor the Internet. If somebody is breaking the law, you pursue them through normal legal channels. You don't go after them by taking them, you know, taking their DNS record offline. You go through normal legal channels and you prosecute them. And if it's a child pornographer, you throw them in jail. But if it's somebody that's saying something politically offensive, this is where it really offends me, because these almost in every case, this is something that's a politically offensive stuff. They get censored by the government that finds it offensive, whether it is the Chinese government or the U.S. government. It's equally reprehensible. It is not okay.
No.
So, do we know who's blocking InfoWars?
Well, InfoWars.com, personally, I am a conspiracy theorist. I'm one of the crackpots. But anyway, not a conspiracy.
I tell you, you read InfoWars, and it's very compelling, and it's hard not to be. That's what's, by the way, that's what's appealing about conspiracies. They make sense. Everything's, in my opinion, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but the reason people love these is because it tries to make sense out of the world, which doesn't make sense. Tries to make it so that you go, oh, I get it. And so it's very appealing. It's because the black helicopters. Oh, well, now I understand. So I can understand the appeal of that. But whether I agree with it or not is completely irrelevant. But here's the problem on the Internet. We don't really necessarily know who's blocking. It could be 4chan that's DDoSing it. Right?
Yeah, no. It could be. But in this case, it's not the...
And by the way, the only people who could know... with some reasonable authority is InfoWars itself, and I'm not sure I'd believe him if he says it's the federal government blocking me.
But he's not saying, see, what happened is basically, you know, Google News, it aggregates news from a bunch of different websites, right?
Oh, so it's Google is keeping, Google won't put it in its news section. That's different, in my opinion. Whether you appear in the Google News section, that's an edit. I think everybody understands that Google News, despite the fact that it's done mechanically on a search algorithm, the sources of Google News, not every news source is in there, just the ones Google chooses. That's an editorial decision. That's completely different than censorship.
But in
if
a
Google
way...
Google blocks that... info... No, not in any way. If Google blocks InfoWars from the search results, that's different. Are they blocking them from the search results? Can you search and find InfoWars?
You can still search and find InfoWars.
Yeah. They just haven't included them in their list of authorities that they use for Google News.
Yeah, some people think that's due to pressure from the government, but there's no proof of that. So.
No, it's not. It's because Google, like me, thinks InfoWars is crackpot.
Which is fine.
You disagree. It's fine. You disagree. If Google, look, call me if Google starts blocking them from the search results, I'll defend you. But you do understand that Google News is an editorial device. Somebody, some human decides what sources are included in Google News. It is not a search of all news sources, because there's no such thing. Somebody has to say what is a news source. And Google does not include InfoWars as a news source. Whether you agree with that or disagree with it, that's their right to do as a commercial entity. That's not censorship. If they block it from the search, it's subtle, I understand, but if they block it from the search, that's different. Then I would say that's in a sense censorship, because the truth is, if you don't show up in Google search, you don't exist, really, on the Internet. Hey, thanks for the call. It's a very good point, Justin. And I'm glad to talk about it. I don't believe this is the federal government in this case. I don't think the federal government is too worried about InfoWars. They may be worried about WikiLeaks. But I don't think they're too worried about InfoWars. Hey, before we go any farther, I tell you what you should be worried about. This is no conspiracy theory. All those beasties, bugs, and Trojan horses on the Internet,
That's why I recommend and use Nod 32 on all my Windows machines. If you use Windows, you need Nod 32. It's the greatest little antivirus ever. Don't just take my word for it. That's what the folks at CNET said. They gave it their editor's choice. 5 out of 5 stars. Best antivirus this year. Virus Bulletin says Nod 32 hasn't missed a virus in the wild in 10 years. In the wild is important. That means real viruses, not some synthetic test. Nod 32 does the job, and not just viruses, but worms, trojans, spyware, even adware. A lot of antivirus companies don't have the cojones. They don't have the nerve to block adware. They say, well, that's free speech. It's an advert. No, I don't want it. Nod 32 blocks it. Phishing scams, even rootkits, the hardest to protect you from. Nod 32 is so effective, and its advanced heuristics find virus-like activity and block it before there's even a signature available. That's important, too. Try it free for 30 days. Go to eset.com/Leo or call 866-935-ESET. ESET's Nod 32. If you use Windows, you need Nod 32. eset.com/Leo or call 866-935-ESET for Nod 32. Karen in San Clemente, California. Hi, Karen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, hi, Leo. It's so good.
Hey.
I never thought I'd talk to a tech guy.
Oh, I'm talking to a geek. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I'm due to get a new phone the 20th of this month.
Woohoo!
I'm excited. I thought, I'm in my 70s, but I thought, well, it's time to try a smartphone while I can still learn.
So the question is, this has changed. When the iPhone first came out, you know, that was it. There was no other choice for 3 years. Now there's some choices. In fact, now every single wireless carrier in the country has a good choice. So the question is, as it used to be before the iPhone, who's your best carrier first? Not which phone, but which carrier do you want to use?
I have Verizon, and I've been happy with them. But
as you should be. I think they're very good.
I hear Bill Handel saying he got the Droid, and he can't even turn the darn thing on.
And Bill's a smart guy, so I have to say, now some of that you know is Bill being Bill.
Oh.
But I think he is right that for a lot of people, the Droid X is a little more phone than they want, especially for your first smartphone.
Uh-huh.
I wish the Windows phone were available on the Verizon because, frankly, that's, to me, the best phone for your first smartphone. It's very easy to use. Right now, it's only AT&T and T-Mobile. I think, though, I know you'd like to get this before Christmas.
Yeah.
But can you wait till January?
Yes.
Because they haven't announced a date, but I'm pretty sure that the Windows Phone 7, the new Windows Phone, will be available on all the carriers early next year.
Windows 07?
It's called Windows Phone 7.
Phone 7. Mm-hmm.
And it is every bit as capable as a smartphone as any other smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the differences between an iPhone, an Android phone, and a Windows phone are kind of like the differences between Mac and Windows. They really, all three do roughly the same thing. But they're not compatible, so you buy apps for just one or the other. And the apps that are available aren't the same, so there's far more on the iPhone, and the Android's now got a lot too, and far fewer on Windows Phone 7. But this is your first smartphone. You don't need every darn application in the world. In fact, that's one of the things that makes it complicated.
Oh.
I think that the apps that are available on Windows Phone 7 are very good. I think Windows Phone 7's user interface is the easiest of the three to understand and to use.
My grandson got a Droid phone. He isn't with Verizon. He's with somebody else. I forget who. Sprint. But he said he got a Droid.
Yeah, it's not a Droid, it's an Android, but it's the operating system's the same. Now, it's nice. Are you in touch with him frequently?
He could teach, he would.
Okay, if you've got, now, see, that's different. See, if Bill Handel had me hanging around with him, he'd have figured this thing out by now.
Hmm.
So that actually does change things. If your grandson's willing to help you with it, then I would say go ahead, because I think you will love it. But it does, it's going to need somebody to spend some time with you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater. This portion of the Tech Guy show brought to you by GoToAssist.com. Actually, it's GoToAssist Express at GoToAssist.com. Remote support made easy. You can try it free for 30 days. Just visit GoToAssist.com/Leo. If you're in the support business, this is a must have. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Christmas came early at the Tech Guy Labs. Google sent me, I was in Paris and I got an email from Google and they said, was it Tuesday or Wednesday? They had an announcement. I was out of town for this, but I think we covered it on my Netcast network on Twit. I think Tom Merritt came in and covered it. They announced the availability of a test program. You can't buy this in stores, of a laptop running Google's Chrome-based operating system called Chrome OS. And they sent me an email saying, you want to try it? And I said, okay. So it's funny. Talk about black helicopters. It is a matte black finish with absolutely no insignia. It doesn't even say Google on it anywhere. It's just a laptop. It's a fairly big laptop. It's not a netbook. It kind of reminds me of the 13-inch Macintosh. It has the same kind of touch pad on it. No CD or DVD, and that makes sense because the whole point of this device is it's running a new operating system from Google that is essentially just the browser. It's Chrome. I happen to like Chrome, but I also happen to like my desktop apps, so I'm wondering, how is this going to work? I guess for a word processor, you use Google Docs, right, or a spreadsheet or a presentation. I guess if you want apps, you go to the new Chrome App Store and you buy apps there. Nowhere does it say what the processor is, what the RAM is. But you know what? I think this in some ways reflects the future of computing. At least that's what Google is expecting or thinking or trying. They were very clear. They said, this is not a review unit. Do not review this. Do not review this. This is not to review. Because it's almost a test program to see how people use it, how they like it, and to get feedback. But they did seeded a lot of the press with this. Comes with Wi-Fi. It comes with 3G access via Verizon. That's kind of interesting. And it's not surprising that they launched the store, the app store, so that there are apps you can buy on it. I mean, I could play games on it, but I have to play them as HTML5 games. And that's what's interesting about this. Now, have you heard about HTML5? The idea is that the internet standard, which is, you know, the internet's based on something called hypertext markup language. The next generation of that standard, HTML5, will include the kinds of capabilities software developers expect. The ability to do animations and graphics, playback video. Everything that you would need to make a standalone program run, you can do through the web in HTML5. Now, it's an early specification. It's not final. A lot of the capabilities aren't there yet, but I think Google and Apple, too, and a number of other companies who really are interested in this idea of web apps have thrown their weight behind it, and this is kind of their response is, well, let's see if this is good enough that you could actually make an operating system that doesn't store applications on the hard drive. They don't say how much RAM's in this or how big the hard drive. They don't say what the processor is. There's a little card in here that they probably had to do in response to interest from Intel. It says, if you cracked this open, you'd find Intel. They want to let you know it is running an Intel chip. But the point really is that users no longer care, do they? Users don't. Do they even care what the OS is anymore? I don't think so. I think that we have a standard set of expectations of what a technology can do for us, whether it's a mobile technology like a phone or a desktop technology like a computer. And that's, as long as it does that, we don't really care what the bits inside are. I've known this day would come. In fact, I've talked about this before. It happens all the time with technology. At first, technology is taken up by the enthusiasts who care about what we call speeds and feeds. What's the processor? How much RAM? We care about that stuff. In the early days of hi-fi stereo, when stereo aficionados talked, how many watts per channel RMS are you getting? What's your total harmonic distortion? When's the last time you
thought about or asked or even knew what RMS and THD were. Enthusiasts cared. They cared a lot. In the early days of stereo, that's all they talked about. And the music was really just an excuse to test out, you know, how well your bass responded, how loud you could play it. They liked the 1812 Overture because there were cannons. That's changed, though, didn't it? In fact, it kind of changed with the rock and roll era. Rolling Stone, instead of stereo, people, you know, hi-fi review, people started reading the Rolling Stone and talking more about the records than about the stuff that you use to play the records back. And that's what the computer industry, we're in that transition now. We've been in it for about 10 years, where we care less and less about the hardware. We know less and less about the hardware. We care more and more about the content, about what it can do. And this is kind of the, this Google laptop is kind of the nth degree of that. It's got... It's got no drive. I don't know how much hard drive there is in here, how much RAM. There's no CD drive. There's no. It's essentially a thing that connects to the internet. It's very, and of course, so is the iPad, really. Apple didn't sell. They did mention that it had the A4 processor in it. I think that that was kind of perhaps, they don't put it in the ads anymore. I think that was perhaps a tip of the hat to people like me who come from those older times when people cared about speeds and feeds. And nobody cares about how much. Do you know how much RAM is in an iPad? Have you ever had a hankering to expand the RAM in your iPad? No. Could you if you wanted to? No, you can't even change the battery. Apple's known this for a while, that people, real people, not geeks like me, real people, just want it to do what it does and get out of the way. Technology should ultimately, right, if it works well, get out of the way. Somebody at the web, the conference I was at this week, said, you know, it took 10 years for the automobile industry to settle on the idea of a steering wheel. There was a debate. Some of them had joysticks, little knobs, little weird lever thingies to steer. Some of them had two things to steer, two levers. But eventually, we all agreed on the steering wheel, and now there's no question. You don't say, hey, I'd like a car with levers, please. What? Huh? Can you put the accelerator on the left? What? No, the accelerator is on the right. The brake is in the middle. If you have a clutch, the clutch is on the left. That's the way it is. All cars, all the time. And computing is starting to be like that, I think. We finally settled on a steering wheel. We're still fighting, though. Isn't it odd how we fight over, oh, the Mac or the or Droid. Android is the best. Or iPhone is the best. Or the PC, Windows is the best. In a decade, people will say, why did you even, what do you care? Why did that matter to you? And it really, in a way, it's just like saying, I am a fan of the Oakland Raiders. No, no. The Tennessee Titans. That's the team for me. It's that. It's rooting. That's all. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number we were, what were we talking about? I don't know. Let's talk to Karen in San Clemente. I think we were talking to Karen about a good phone. And I just wanted to follow up on that, Karen. I'm sorry to get distracted a little bit. Since you have a grandson who's willing to help you, I think that's very good. And I'm looking at the phones that Verizon offers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of the phones that Verizon offers right now, you really have two choices. I wouldn't waste your time on the keyboard phones, which are the Droid Pro and the Droid 2. I don't think they're going to get in your way.
Mm-hmm. I believe that, yeah.
Yeah, it's rather the Droid X, which is what Bill Handel, the morning man at KFI, has, or the Droid Incredible. Now, I think the Droid Incredible is a incredible phone, if you'll pardon the expression. But the Droid X has a bigger screen. I don't know how your eyesight is, but as I've gotten older, I find I like the bigger screen.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would do is go with your grandson to the Verizon store and play with those two.
Okay.
And if he's willing to help you, I would say don't go with a Windows phone. You don't have to wait. And really, the only choice is the Droid X or the Incredible. And then let him help you, and I think you'll find you love it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. To the Tech Guy Show, brought to you by Carbonite.com. It's backup done right, and you could try it free right now. You don't even need a credit card. Just go to Carbonite.com and use the offer code Leo. Try it free for 2 weeks. If you decide to buy, you'll get 2 months free if you use my name. Leo at Carbonite.com. Kathy, Pasadena, California, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey. Welcome to the show.
question concerns what I'm told is perhaps a loose GPU, but I'm not convinced, and I'll tell you why. My computer screen is blurry after about 4 minutes after I load Windows, and it stays that way unless I enable computer sharing monitor sharing via S-Video with the TV, and then the problem goes away right away.
Ah. So it looks fine on the TV. It only looks bad. Is it a laptop?
No. It looks, I don't actually even need to turn on the TV. It just fixes the laptop screen right away. The blurriness stops immediately.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So it's blurry until you tell it I want output through S-Video.
Right. Even though I don't actually output through S-Video, I just say share this monitor. The TV I never even turn on. It just fixes my laptop screen right away.
I'm wondering what's going on with the display settings. If you look, you're a Windows machine, I assume.
Correct.
Of course you are.
There's
no S-Video on a Mac.
Configuring the size of the screen and
I would look in the display control panel. First step is to make sure that the screen it has chosen is the screen you're actually using.
It is.
So it's a who makes the laptop?
It's a ThinkPad.
So it says IBM ThinkPad screen.
Correct.
Or I'm sorry, Lenovo.
Because I bought it. It's an old.
It was IBM. Okay, good. IBM ThinkPad screen. So it knows the right. The reason I ask is because the driver for the screen describes to the computer, to the operating system, what the screen's capable of, the normal resolution and all of that. And I'm just wondering if it's at a normal resolution.
Well,
have you tried other resolutions?
I have tried several different resolutions for both monitors. Only one shows up, actually, is enabled, obviously, when I don't have it sharing.
Good, because that's the correct. Normally, if you have the right driver for the monitor, it will just show one. That's what's called the native resolution
exactly.
for the screen. And what is that resolution? Do you remember?
Well, I have it on sharing right now, so I could talk to you and actually be able to look at the screen.
Wow. How blurry? So it's so blurry that you can't see the screen, that you can't read it.
Letters or anything. Everything, it looks like it's static almost. Ooh. And so I've tried updating the video card drivers. I've tried everything in display properties that I could possibly think of.
I presume that you have the refresh rate at 60 hertz.
I do.
Because that's the only thing really that a laptop and an LCD will do.
Yeah. I'm looking at it right now, and it's a 60 hertz refresh.
And check to see if when you go off of S-Video, if it changes it to something. Well, you can't, can you? Because you can't see it.
It does not. See, when somebody said to me that it was perhaps a loose GPU and to wedge a coin.
No, it's not a loose. It's not a loose GPU. I could tell you that right now.
I didn't think so either. I think it has something to do with frequency or something.
Yeah, it sounds like what happens. See, what happens when you plug in it or you tell it to use an external monitor is it just does change those settings. You're mirroring and it's changing the settings to reflect what the external monitor is capable of.
Exactly.
And those settings work.
And it works. But mind you, even though the S-Video cable is plugged in, it doesn't do it itself, and nor does turning the actual TV that is connected. That doesn't actually need to even be turned on.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you have a VGA connector on that ThinkPad.
Do I have a VGA connector?
If you could connect it to an external monitor.
Yeah.
Connect it to an external monitor, see how that looks.
Okay.
Or maybe better yet, restart it in safe mode.
Okay.
You know how to do that? When you restart it in safe mode, it defaults to a generic VGA driver, not the fancy Dan driver that you want to use. It's a low quality driver.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking that when it does that, you will be able to see the screen normally, and you'll be able to go to those settings and make sure they're set correctly.
Okay. Just make sure that they're set at whatever they were originally.
60 hertz refresh rate, and then what you'd like to find out is what's the native resolution. How big a screen is it?
It's a 14.1.
14-inch screen. In that day and age, I mean, it's a fairly old laptop. It probably wasn't super high resolution.
I have the original description is, I assume is what you're referring to, is 1400 times 1050.
Yeah, that's exactly right. 14 by 1050, yeah. So make sure it's set at that.
If the screen is set at 14 by 1050 and 60 hertz, then it's set properly. And if you see it, you know, if you go into, now in start and safe mode, you probably won't be able to set it to that because it's running the VGA driver. So what you want to do is go to the safe mode, reinstall the video driver. Get, if you can't get it from the IBM site, you may not, it may be too late for that. But if you have a disk, reinstall the driver for the display. Make sure you got the driver, you know, it's fixed. And then, I'm trying to think.
That would be. I mean,
well, it really sounds like it's got a bad refresh rate. It sounds like the refresh rate is not 60 hertz.
Well,
the problem is you can't check it. What happens is as soon as you turn on S video, it goes, oh, I got to be 60 hertz for the TV.
Yeah.
And so it works. Is there any reason you don't want to leave it that way?
At
whatever it is with the screen on?
Well, yeah, I'm tethered to a TV. It's a laptop.
Oh, you have to be connected. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of a drag. Yeah. It does not sound like a hardware malfunction because you can see the screen fine.
I can see fine when it's connected to the TV. I can see my laptop screen just fine. Everything stops moving.
Yeah.
It freezes it.
People are telling me that the real issue is that the screen resolution of that screen, that old IBM ThinkPad, mm-hmm. It's not capable of that 1440 by 1050 that you've got. Okay. It is 1024 by 768. It's VGA. That does sound right.
Well, right now, I'm looking at screen resolution in display properties, and I'm looking on primary monitor, which is the laptop, and it is set to be 14.
Yeah. That's the TV out. It's set for your TV. And it's working on your TV, it's going, by the way, to a different resolution. You're not in mirroring, probably. You're probably in extended desktop.
Yes, I am. That's correct.
So it's setting itself properly, and the TV is the larger size. But you're telling me, though, that the laptop screen is clear now, right?
I'm telling you the laptop screen is clear.
Yeah. So what's happening is when you disconnect the S video, it's reverting to the wrong settings.
Okay.
Now I've got Matt in here. He's a software engineer.
Huh?
And he says you could also VNC do remote desktop into the computer from another computer and fix those settings. Now that's a little tricky, but it sounds like you've got somebody there helping you.
No, the
issue, Kathy, is that the settings, when you take off the monitor, go revert, I think, revert to settings that the display can't handle.
Okay.
You've got to reset the settings. I'll tell you what, I'm going to let you go, but keep listening because I'm going to confer with my friends in the chat room, my brain in the chat room. We're going to find a way to reset those settings without getting to your computer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tech Guy Show brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866, the number 2, GetNet, to get DSL Extreme. We were talking before the break with Kathy, whose laptop, her old ThinkPad, so old that it still was an IBM at the time, ThinkPad, is fuzzy and weird until she connects it up to a television screen. Then it looks fine. My diagnosis from remote control, and I think that this is correct, and the chat room, my externalized brain seems to agree, is that for some reason the settings are, the display settings are wrong. Now, as soon as you connect to a TV, what happens on all computers is it goes into, in her case, extended desktop mode. It sets the settings proper for the screen, the TV screen, in her case 14, I think she said 1440 by 1050, which is absolutely not the native resolution for that laptop. That's way too high. It's definitely a TV setting and 60 hertz. It also, at the same time as it does that, it creates two display settings in effect. And the one on her laptop screen suddenly becomes clear because that's set properly now. Probably to 1024 by 768, 60 hertz. As soon as she disconnects the TV, it reverts to some weird fuzzy setting. So somehow she needs to get into that those display settings and correct them. Now, it seems to me there ought to be a way to kind of hold a shift key down or something when you're booting into Windows and have it go to the default settings, but obviously there isn't. I would guess the best thing for her to do, and this is what the chat room suggests as well, is go into safe mode. See if it looks all right in safe mode. It probably does. If it does, then we know that there's no hardware issue. It's just a driver issue. No, people are saying 1440 by 1050 is the normal resolution for ThinkPads. Okay. Thank you, chat room. It's a high-end ThinkPad. All right. These are the workstation ThinkPads. So that, it could be that. I would say just, you know, reboot, press F, tap F8, get into safe mode. Maybe things will reset. You certainly could, while you're in safe mode, reinstall the video driver. The problem is once you're in safe mode, you cannot change the settings. The settings are locked in at generic VGA. Another choice would be to do a remote session with somebody and have them get into your system while it's fuzzy and change the settings. That's a weird way to do it, but I think that's another way to do it. Join.me, somebody suggested. Of course, go to my PC would work. Remote desktop would work if you have a version of Windows that supports that. I think join.me is a good choice. Problem is, how does she get into that? How does she get it working? I guess she can get it working when the TV's connected. That's what you do. She can, you know, it all works fine until she disconnects the TV. And then she can't see well enough to fix the settings. That's why there ought to be some button you can press that says, put the screen settings back to normal. Mike, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Mike, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
How are you today?
I'm doing very good. How about you?
Very well. Back from France. A little jet lag, but I think I'm all here. I had about 18 cups of coffee, and that seemed to have helped.
All right. More power to you. I need your help. I have a Super 8 millimeter film that's about 40 to 50 years old, and I finally got it into the computer, but I'm looking for a program to help me clean it up, try to get rid of a few years from it.
You want to de-scratchify it?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I know that you don't want to get any of the dust or hair or anything like that into the footage, but when you're dealing with material that old, it's kind of hard. And I'm looking for a program that would just help me clean it up a little bit.
And you are on Windows, I presume?
Yes, I am.
All right.
I have Studio 12, and I am not really seeing the tools that I need for that. So
yeah, what you need is a plug-in. You don't want to have to do it frame by frame, obviously. So I would say what you want is something for Studio 12, a plugin for Studio 12 that does video cleanup. And I'm just scanning through here to see if there's anything. Anybody in the chat room has any suggestions for this? I'd love to hear about it as well. And they're not saying anything. You know, there's things like Magic Bullet for Final Cut on the Mac that do this.
Okay.
There's a lot of software for Final Cut. This is a very common issue in Final Cut. And I would guess that somebody's made a plugin that will do something like this.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah. I'm just nobody. Let's see. Magix Studio 12. You know, the company Magix, M-A-G-I-X, makes cleanup software for audio, and I'm wondering if they do video. A number of people are saying Virtual Dub. I guess Virtual Dub is probably your best bet. You won't be running it in studio. You'll be running it standalone. It's an open source program, so it's free, virtualdub.org. And it has a lot of filters, and I bet you it has a denoise filter. Remember, it's not going to – look, you're not going to make this video look perfect unless you're willing to go through frame by frame.
Yeah, I realize that. And
like if there's a hair in the gate
– what's that?
And if there was a hair in the gate and there's a hair on the film or whatever, you'd have to go frame by frame and digitally remove the hair. You could do that. It's a lot of work. So the two programs I'm seeing again and again are VirtualDub, virtualdub.org. That's free.
Okay.
And then AVI Synth, which is also an open source program, is free. Nobody in the chat room is, nor have I found any plugins for Pinnacle Systems Studio 12, which is, I think, a great editor program.
So it sounds like what you're going to do is you're going to run it through these other programs first for cleanup. AVI Synth is a post-production tool that does, in fact, do this kind of cleanup.
Okay.
But it's not as easy to use as I'd like. I mean,
I know, but, it's just basically a work in progress. But I was also wondering if any of them have where I can control the contrast because
That's easy.
Overexposed.
Yeah, that part's easy. If it's overexposed, remember, though, that there's not a lot of data there. You know, if it's too bright, you can turn it down, but because there was no data there in the first place, it's a lot easier to fix something that's too dark than too bright.
Yep.
But, these programs will do the best you can. It's certainly a worthwhile project. You get these great old films that you want to save. I think it's absolutely worthwhile. And I think the chat room seems in high agreement that AVI Synth is a great choice and Virtual Dub is a great choice. And since they're both free, widely supported, open source software, I think you're probably going to find what you need there.
All right, great. Thanks, Leo.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Kind of fun, isn't it, to recover these old slides and videos? And he did the hard part, which is get it into the computer. Once it's bits, even if there's nothing today, you know, always keep the original, by the way. Because even if the software tools today aren't perfect, who knows what's going to be possible a couple of years from now? This came home to me the other day. We were doing a show called Mac Break Weekly, and my friend Ray Maxwell, who's been on this show before, mentioned, actually, well, I should have mentioned this, Topaz Labs, because it turns out they do video as well as still picture recovery. But Topaz Labs has a new program called InFocus that blew my mind. I've been throwing out pictures that were blurry for years. Even digital photos, if it's too blurry, well, it's gone, right? You're never going to save it. Wrong. Technology constantly marches forward. And Ray told me about this program, Topaz. It's topazlabs.com. It's a $70 program. You could try it free, though, that takes out-of-focus material and makes it in focus. What? I didn't think it was possible. It's quite remarkable. So always save the originals. And I'll tell you what, I'm mad at myself because I threw out some great pictures that were just slightly out of focus and I might have been able to recover using this tool, but nothing existed until recently. This is like magic. So if you've got the video, do what you can now, but don't throw away the original because who knows, in 5 years, somebody may come up with something that you can recover much, much more of it. And I would go to Topaz and look because they do have tools for video as well, for cleanup video as well. TopazLabs.com. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Oh, we're talking about all that cool stuff that's going on in technology. I've been playing with this Google laptop, which they have sent out to reviewers. They call it the CR48, which, of course, is the periodic table of elements number for Chromium. Chromium is the open source name for the Chrome browser. And this laptop is Google saying very clearly, loud and clear, that this is our operating system. Guess what? It's just a browser. There's nothing else. You want a file system? Nope. You want to see what's on the hard drive? Nope. I mean, maybe they'll have a web app that lets me see what's on the hard drive, but I suspect not. It's really just a browser. They do have a Chromium or a Chrome web store. You can go and buy, you know, $1.99. You can buy a game. You can buy applications. Of course, if you use Google Docs or Google Apps, you're set because all of those apps are capable. In fact, when you open the laptop, you log into your Google account, and now it's you. It's a very interesting new way, a new take on computing, where the computer, the operating system, the hard drive, everything local is irrelevant. It's just a portal, a window to the cloud, the internet, where all your stuff lives. It's got a microphone and a camera. Doesn't have a caps lock key, though. That's kind of interesting. It just has a search button where the caps lock key would go. You know, it's funny, I thought it was just me, but every time I get a new computer, I disable the caps lock key because I don't want it. I very rarely use caps lock. And I guess Google realized that that's how a lot of people use a computer. So they don't have a caps lock key. They have a search key where the caps lock key would go. Also, all the function keys are gone. There's no F1, F2. That's a IBM PC kind of a conceit. Remember function keys? All our computers still have them. But in the most, for the most part, what they've done in on those function keys is given them dual functionality, and you know, they you do things like control sound and the screen brightness and so forth. For the Google laptop, they still have those little buttons at the top, but they're not function keys. They're browser keys. Back, forward, reload, full screen, next tab. Isn't that interesting? And then it has the screen brightness and sound as well. Oh, they have Angry Birds? Would you please download that for me? Okay, I give it a thumbs up. Really? Angry Birds? Wow. That was another person I met, a very interesting fellow, the CEO of Rovio, the Finnish company that created what is simply the hottest game on mobile devices anywhere. I like Angry Birds. I'm not a crazy Angry Birds fanatic, but is having Angry Birds on, it's the only notebook I know of that has Angry Birds on it. That's pretty high praise. Uh-oh. It won't let me play? It says internet failure? Oh, no. Okay, maybe I do like Angry Birds a lot. Back to the phones. Anyway, they said this isn't a review unit. This is just, we're just testing, so I'm not reviewing it. But I am trying to read the tea leaves, and I think Google, and why wouldn't Google do that? Google's always said, the more you use the internet, the more we make. We're happy if you just use the internet a lot. So it makes sense if they make it, if they make an operating system that is completely internet-centric. I don't think Google will be selling laptops anytime soon. I think that this is a what they call a reference design that they hope other manufacturers will adopt. It's very interesting. Edward in Piggott, Arkansas. Hey, Edward, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, Leo. How are you this afternoon?
I couldn't be better. How are you?
Good, good. Great show you're putting on today, as always.
Thank you.
Listen, I just got a couple of questions, so I'll just get right to it. I'm a totally blind user of both the Apple iMac, and I have a MacBook, and I also use the Apple iPhone, and I use the VoiceOver screen reader that's built into both the iPhone and the Macs. Both.
Pretty amazing stuff, it seems to me. I'm not blind, but everybody I know who's blind says they really like it.
Oh, yeah. I've used a Mac probably since 2008, I think, is when I got my first one. It was a 20-inch iMac.
Wow.
And I'm really enjoying it. I just recently got a MacBook. My wife, who is deafblind, she uses an iPhone. She doesn't talk on it, of course, but she uses hers with the advent of their new iOS. They use you can use a Braille display with it now.
Wow. So she has a Braille display hooked up through the 30-pin port.
No, it's actually Bluetooth.
It's a Bluetooth. Wow. So the Braille, for folks who don't know, a Braille display, if you've ever seen one, it's very cool. It's normally you would connect it to a computer. Of course, if you're blind, you can't see the screen. If you're deaf, you can't hear the screen reader. But the Braille display actually creates a strip of Braille, which you can read with your fingers. And it's constantly moving. The little pins coming up. So it's like a little Braille, almost like a printer. And so you hold your fingers on the Braille display, and you can read what's on the screen.
Right, and that's how she does. She's actually found more ways to use that, you know, with all the apps that are out there. She's got more access now than she ever had. You know,
Edward, that is so cool. I would never. Now, why the phone and not the iPod Touch?
Well,
need the Bluetooth. You need the Bluetooth.
A text message.
And text message.
Yeah.
See, this to me, I'm sorry, let me just pause for a moment, Edward, and just say how exciting and inspiring this is, because these devices open a whole world up to people.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's just incredible.
And Apple doesn't, I mean, they don't even, well, they may, but they really do not realize what they've done for us.
Oh, I think they do. You know what? I can remember back to the dim, dark days when accessibility on any computer, but especially on graphic user interfaces, was horrible.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Apple very consciously said, let's make the Macintosh accessible. By doing so, they really drove Windows, Microsoft to do the same. And then by far, the iPhone and iOS is the most accessible portable
interface out there. I mean, but I look at Windows Phone 7 and they're starting to put some pretty good accessibility in there. I met a couple of months ago a woman that Microsoft had just hired to ensure accessibility across all platforms. Her portfolio wasn't Windows, wasn't phone, wasn't Xbox, it was everything. And she could go into every department and say, let's make this accessible. So believe me, companies are aware of this. And I don't think it's just because of the ADA requiring them to do so. I think they really have a commitment to it. And it's inspiring to think of how, especially your wife, who would be normally, kind of disconnected.
Right, right. It's really
the whole internet's open to her now.
Yeah, it is.
It's remarkable.
Well, my couple of questions, and that's why I mentioned that, because I'm actually it's funny your caller before you talk about not the one the video having saving originals because you might be able to save do something. I actually use
right.
an app on mine. It's called Gutted Photo Pro.
Oh.
It was created for people that take their pictures of themselves. Obviously, they're not going to be looking at the viewfinder. So what it does is it with text-to-speech, it actually tells you when that face is in focus.
Wow.
And so it enables blind people to be able to take straight shots, good shots, not out-of-focus shots of people, and get it centered.
That's so great.
It is.
It's amazing.
99 cents for it, and I'll tell you, I don't personally, I have a 3-year-old son, and he's been a lot of my example. I use him a lot. I just took a picture yesterday of him with my seeing eye dog. I have a guide dog, German Shepherd, and he was just laying on the floor with him, and I thought, I have got to get this picture. And it will only take the picture if it's centered properly. It takes it on its own. You just tells you whether you go up or down or left or right.
So cool.
And
you can send that to family and friends, and they've got a picture.
Yeah, yeah, and they've come out well. Everyone I've done Facebook and sent them to my mom was my first gopher. I sent her a bunch.
And I bet your mom burst into tears.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is, I'm about to, that's just so cool. What is it, G-U-T-T-E-D, gutted?
Guided.
Guided, oh, what am I, I'm an idiot. Of course. Guided. That makes a little more sense. Guided Photo Pro.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. But my question is on the video on the iPhone. Unfortunately, they don't have one to do that yet. But like you said, they may. So I have to have somebody else help me take video, moving video. But I'm wanting to take the .mov files produced by them and convert. Mm-hmm. A DVD format. I have one of my son and I performing a Christmas thing.
Do you have a Mac or Windows?
Mac.
Very easy. You'll connect the iPhone up,
mm-hmm.
and it will initially give you iPhoto. You can use that to import,
mm-hmm.
And then that will import a QuickTime movie,
right?
Which you then open in iMovie, and you can have iMovie make a DVD, a video DVD for you.
Oh, so I'll go ahead and import it into iPhoto?
Yeah, iPhoto. Actually, you go straight to iDVD. You have iDVD as well, and that's what's going to burn it, either through from iMovie or iPhoto. So it should be fairly straightforward. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion. We're talking about computers and the internet and cell phones and camcorders, MP3 players, our gizwiz. Dick DiBartolo, our gadget guru, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, joins us at 48 past the hour to talk about some cuckoo gadget. He's cuckoo. But first, Joe in Northridge, California. Hey, Joe, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Welcome back.
Thanks for calling. Yeah, thank you. It's good to be back. Best thing about travel, I love to travel. But what happens is you get home and you really appreciate it. It's like, I'm home!
I totally agree. It's great to see the world, but there's no place like home, right?
Exactly.
So the reason I'm calling is I'm working on my first startup, and I was wondering if you know of any websites or schools for startups that would help people learn how to launch a successful software startup.
This is actually a very hot category right now. People who do investing, angel investors in particular, they call it early stage investors, learned very early on that the most valuable thing they could add to the mix was their knowledge, not the money, but the knowledge. You certainly need the money, but somebody who is an expert in startups, trust me, as somebody who's just started his own business, I wouldn't call it a startup exactly, but it's definitely, there's a lot to learn. And people have been there before, especially in tech startups. There's no reason to make it up. One of the first startup schools was started by a guy named Paul Graham, who was an early stage investor and observed, boy, you know, it seems like people could learn something. And he created something called Y Combinator. What Y Combinator does is every year, twice a year, they open up, and they've been doing this for about 5 years now, they open up for applications for startups. And startups apply. If you get in, you get a small amount of money, about $18,000. But more importantly, you get to come to Silicon Valley for 3 months and basically go to startup school.
Wow.
And you learn how to do a startup, and you learn everything you need to know. It doesn't teach you how to program. It's not about that. It teaches you how to run a business, how to get money, how to raise money, and all that stuff. And you get a little bit of money. You know, he doesn't invest a huge amount. You get a little bit of money. Then they have a demo day at the end of it in which you present to investors. Investors love people who've gone through Y Combinator because they already, you know a lot of the things that they need to know. They're working with people who've been vetted. Paul's brilliant. Really knows how to work with them. And people who have gone to startup school at Y Combinator include Looped, Reddit, Scribd, Discuss, Dropbox, Justin.tv, Heroku, Posterous, and Bump. I mean, they have, you know, a dozen successful startups over the last 5 years.
That's really exciting, Leo. It must be very competitive and hard to get into.
It's hard to get into. Because everybody wants it. Now, there are other schools that have followed along Paul's model. Some of them are good. Some of them are not good. So, you know, this is the one, if you ask me, and it's the one I would try to get into. But there are other startup schools as well that you can. And I don't, you know, I'm not knowledgeable as to which ones are good or not. And so I'm just going to avoid commenting on any of them. What you'd look for, though, is a group of angel investors who have a good track record, have worked with startups before, who know what they're doing, not people who are predators in the ecosystem, because this is the unfortunate thing. There's so much money being made now in the tech startup field that there are predators out there who will take your money, say, you're going to startup school, and you'll get very little out of it. So, the one, if you've got a good startup, you'll get in. The one to go for, Joe. And you'd have to move to Silicon Valley for 3 months. Is Y Combinator, Paul Graham's school. It's incredible.
I can definitely move anywhere I need to get that kind of experience and access.
Well, by the way, I think that's one of the reasons they say that is if you say no, I don't want to do it. They say you're not startup material, dude. If you want to be a successful tech startup, you have to go all in. There's no, I want to stay home because my family, I got kids. No, you're all in, dude. And that's why most of the people here are young, mostly unattached. Paul Graham says, generally there's two founders. He says you can't have too many and you can definitely have too few. Two is the best. One technical person and one business person often is the case. But anyway, he's got a lot of ideas about what makes a good startup. It's worth reading his stuff. Paul Graham. And Y Combinator. And you know, even if you don't get into Y Combinator, just read Paul Graham's material because that's a school in and of itself. He's really brilliant. P-A-U-L-G-R-A-H-A-M dot com.
And that's where you'll, by the way, the first place you'd go to find out about Y Combinator. In fact, it's right on his front page. Want to start a startup? Get funded by Y Combinator, and then he'll talk about it. They've had their winter application deadline was October 19th. But the school doesn't begin until January. He says you can't apply late. And they do this twice a year, so there's another chance in 6 months. Good luck. I won't ask you what your startup is because you probably want to keep it secret until you're ready to. They call it stealth. I'm in stealth mode. Michelle Whittier, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Michelle. Thanks for hanging on.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, my son is going to be 2 years old, and he recently just threw my laptop on the floor and jumped on it. So
Oh, no.
I first heard the initial crash, and when I ran in, I saw the jump, and I was like, too late.
Oh, kids will do those things.
Yeah, I'm lucky, though, it does. Well, it has black, like, big blotches right down the center.
Yeah, he broke the LCD screen. That's what happened, is he broke the LCD screen.
Okay, I'm really concerned because I'm kind of skeptical about some of the websites I've been seeing and how much things are supposed to cost. Because I called Dell, and they told me the price would be like $350. We only paid like $550 for the computer.
Yeah, the screen's the most expensive part.
Okay, so do you know of a website, a good website where I can buy? Because I'm kind of scared. The websites I've been coming across look just a little bit kind of shady.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me see if I could. I've used one, and they were quite good, and I'm trying to remember the name of it.
Is it easy to install on my own, or?
No.
I have to have.
And to be honest with you, if the computer costs you $500, the part alone is going to be around. What Dell is quoting you, nobody's going to go much lower than that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought, because the prices I was
you're
going to
be,
about,
you're
like,
probably going to be buying a new computer, to be honest. The place I went to, I had the same thing. My daughter's Mac laptop got screwed up. Mm-hmm. And the company I had fix it, and they did a great job. They send you a box, and you send it, and they do it overnight and all that stuff. And they're not fly-by-night. This is a good company. It's called Tech Restore, TechRestore.com.
Okay.
But I don't know if they'll do your particular brand, and it's not going to be cheap. It's going to be a couple hundred bucks at least. I spent, $500 for the Mac laptop. And the thing is, you know, they're making these so cheap now. That $500 laptop, it's almost cheaper to buy a new laptop.
Yeah. Okay. I was just looking online, and the prices that I saw, at first YouTube had to do it, and I found it, you know, it seemed pretty simple. So I was looking at the price.
Yeah, but you're going to have to buy the part. The part's going to cost you $150.
Yeah. Well, I was seeing $80 and $70. That's why I called you, because I'm like thinking.
Oh. Well, you might, you know, okay, here's the other thing. Do you have an external display port on that computer? Can you hook up a VGA monitor to it?
I bet
you do. You probably
I think
could
so. It's an Inspiron 1545. So
yeah, it has. Dell has a little monitor port on there. You could just get a cheap external monitor and continue to use it. In fact, if the keyboard's messed up and the mouse is messed up, get a USB keyboard and mouse. Put the laptop aside. You've got a desktop now.
Okay. Yeah. Just that screen is the only thing that's, and not even the entire screen. So.
No, the screen's shot. The whole thing is shot.
Yeah,
he broke it. They get broken. That they're the most fragile part. You could probably try it if you're willing to screw up the computer and have to buy a new one, or put an external screen on it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Alex in Long Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Alex.
Leo, help, contracts.
Uh-oh, what's the matter? What's the matter?
All right, so I ran out of
actually, this is good news. This is good news. Your contract is up.
It's up. But my pop is like, what about my Verizon cable and my landline and your internet? I go, I don't need the internet. I don't need the landline. He's like, "What about my Fox Sports?" I'm like, "Oh gosh."
Your contract is up with Verizon Wireless, right?
Well, Verizon Fios. I have a bundle.
You're talking about your Fios.
Well, the Fios is a landline, the cable.
No, I understand what the Fios is. So you're saying, but which contract is up?
It's Verizon. I don't have wireless with them. It's just a landline cable internet.
Okay, got it. I thought you were talking about your wireless. So you're saying I don't have to, I'm done with Fios?
Well, I can go month to month or go back into a contract for $10 less a month. Or I don't know if there's another option. I should go another way.
Well, are you happy with it?
Well, I'm paying the bill, and I'm paying a lot of other bills, and it's $150 a month. So
wow.
My parents.
And what do you get for $150? You get home phone service.
Unlimited long distance in the United States. Extended basic cable that has a soccer channel on it, and internet 15.5.
Okay, so let's go through these things. The fast internet. I don't know what Fios charges if it's standalone, but I think it's about $50, right?
Standalone, I'm not really sure, but it's one.
Yeah, I think it's $50. I don't think you're going to get better service than Fios in terms of speed. I don't know how reliable they are where you are. Most of the people I talk to say that Fios is quite reliable. If you're happy with the reliability and the speed of Fios, I think you're going to stick with that. You could certainly replace the phone service with Magic Jack or something like that and get similar service, but it's not going to be as good.
Uh-huh.
But you could save, you could probably get that for $20 a year. I think Magic Jack's pretty cheap. And then the cable, now you say extended basic cable, and you're getting that soccer channel. I think $150 is about right.
Yeah.
I mean, well, for those three things, you could probably save money on the phone line.
Okay.
By getting, some sort of voice over the internet, or even, I'll be honest with you, if you get, basic service from your local phone company, it's probably $20 or less a month. So you'd save money on the phone line. You're going to spend $100 for the cable TV and the internet access, no matter who you go to.
So it's not a bad deal overall, then.
I think it's not a great deal. It's not like, wow, I'm saving $80. But I don't think you're going to save more than $20 or $30 if you tried to bundle it yourself. And you're probably not going to get equivalent quality of service. I think, are you happy? The real question is, are you happy with what you got?
Yeah, I'm happy with it. I was just trying to cut corners somewhere. And then it's like, well, they'll give me another $10, $15 discount if I go another 2 years with them, or I can go month to month with a little bit higher rate.
So what we could do is we could go to DSL Extreme and you'd get $15 for the first year only. It's going to go up after a year, but you get $15 internet. You could get a cable, probably basic cable, for $30 or $40. So that's $45. And you can get Magic Jack. That's $20 a year. So now that we got you down to $50 a month for all three services, but it's not going to be as fast.
True.
Phone service on Magic Jack is not going to have 911. It's not going to, if your internet isn't as fast, the quality is not going to be as good. I bet your Skype is great on your Fios.
I haven't really tried it, though,
You're not going to get your soccer channel without paying for an additional bundle, which is going to bring the price up.
Yeah, my dad's older. So, soccer channel.
I mean, $150 nowadays, my cable bill's around $100. It's expensive, but you absolutely could combine it all and get a lot cheaper. You could. You get down to $50 a month. So if money is a serious concern for you at this point, and you're willing to go with slower internet, less reliable phone service, and fewer features on your cable, you could get it down by $100 a month.
Gotcha. Thank you, Leo.
You're welcome, Alex. I mean, it's a good question. We spend a lot nowadays for this stuff. And you've got the creme de la creme, in my opinion. You got Verizon, which is very good. Hey, let me tell you something about if you've got high-speed internet, backing up just got a lot easier with our good friends from Carbonite. Carbonite uses your internet connection to automatically back up your data online to the cloud where it's safe. In fact, you can even use additional encryption to protect it so it's safe from prying eyes as well as safe from disaster. It uses 128-bit SSL during the transmission, so even if you're using a notebook and you're at an internet cafe with an open access point, all your data is protected even in transmission. And boy, is this the key on online backup is how easy is it to restore? It couldn't be easier. You log on anywhere to your Carbonite account, and there's your data. Even with your iPhone, there's a free iPhone app, or your BlackBerry, there's a free BlackBerry app. Carbonite.com. Now, why don't you try it free for 2 weeks? I do like it if you try it first. To make sure that it's, you know, your internet speed, for instance, at home is sufficient, because it does use your bandwidth. You know, if you have a DSL or cable connection, you've got plenty of speed to do it. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo. Try it free for 2 weeks. If you decide to buy, and I know you will because it's a great service and a great peace of mind, you can get 2 months off the normal, very affordable $55 a year. And by the way, it's for unlimited. All the personal data on your internal drive, so whether you've got 1 gig or 500 gigs, it's unlimited backup for one low price. That lasts about 15 cents a day. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo. Got to back it up to get it back, so do it right with Carbonite. Andrew in Portland, Oregon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
That's good to hear. Quick question for you. I got a PlayStation 3 just recently. And I was looking to the move, but seeing as I have cerebral palsy, it's looking like that might not be the best option. But the more I see consoles, like the Kinect and everything, it's like, what am I going to do in a year when everything's not done by controller?
Oh, don't worry. Well, first of all, they're never going to get rid of the controllers. You're probably not able to hold your hand steady enough.
No, I have a hard time even with the controller. Thank you, Sony, for
You can you can forget the Move or the Kinect. They require, you know, a fairly steady
full body
hand.
Movement.
Yeah, and Kinect requires full body. Move does not. Move is only looking at that little ball at the end of the controller.
I had trouble with the Wii, so it's probably
It's very similar. So I think you're out of luck on those. But here's the good news. I mean, that nobody's going to go fully to that kind of interface. Microsoft, which has said, we'll probably start incorporating Kinect technology into other stuff, will use it. But I don't want to have to dance around in front of my computer. You're going to always have controllers, mouse, keyboard. You're not getting rid of those.
For sure. Well, if you got time then, can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
I have a Sprint phone, and the nice folks at Sprint as they are,
Hold on, we're going to take a break. Hang on, and I'll answer your phone question, too, in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Citrix, makers of the fabulous GoTo Assist Express, to try it free for 30 days. It's great for support professionals. GoToAssist.com/Leo. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. My phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. 888-ASK-LEO. That makes it a little easier to remember. Now, we were talking to Andrew in Portland, Oregon, and he's got a Sprint phone. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Leo.
So what's the issue here?
Well, I signed up for Sprint back in July, and I talked to the Sprint people when I first signed up, as they make you do anyway, and I made it really clear to them that I needed insurance because I dropped the phone a lot being in my chair, and, well, it happened. I dropped it on the bus, and it's gone now and can't find it. It's lost. And I called them and said, hey, I lost my phone. I need to see about getting a replacement. And then they told me, oh, you don't have any insurance.
Ah.
So they didn't put it on there.
Ah.
And then they're like, well, we can see if the insurer will put it on after 6 months, but we don't know, and we'll let you know in 3 days. It's been 3 days and not a word.
Yeah, I mean, what can I say? They screwed up, obviously. But you didn't pay for it, right? I mean, you weren't paying for it.
No, I didn't pay for it, but now I'm in a space where now it's either pay $400 for a phone or pay $200 to get out of my contract and go back to another company.
Yeah. What can I say?
And being, I'm sure you've noticed that since I have a disability, I'm on a fixed income.
Right.
That's not the easiest thing to do.
I mean, at this point, you probably, I mean, I don't know what to say.
You thought you had the insurance.
You didn't have the insurance. What are they going to do? There's nothing you could do. You didn't pay. You weren't paying for it. You have my condolences, but there's nothing much they or anyone else could do at this point. Frank, Fresno, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Frank.
Hey, good afternoon, Leo. I can't believe you got through after 4 months, you know.
That's not bad. 4 months, you know, you figure there's about 1 million people listening.
I know.
There's only 5 lines. Do the math.
No, I called you back in August. I think that's the reason why. So, hey, if you push redial, it works, you know.
Eventually.
Yeah.
4 months later.
Hey, I got a question for you. Other than your listener before, he had a problem with his phone. Anyway, I've got an iPhone 3GS. My upgrade isn't until mid-January. So my question to you, should I wait until June until Apple releases maybe
another
phone? Yeah,
there's going to be an iPhone 5.
Oh, ooh.
Well, of course there is. I mean, just as there was an iPhone 3.
3.
3GS or 3S, 3GS, 4. Maybe it'll be the 4S. I don't know what they're going to label it, but there's a new iPhone every year, and they will absolutely add some feature. I'm not sure what. You know, these phones are fairly mature at this point. They include most of what I'd expect a phone to include. An excellent camera, a front-facing camera, so you can do those FaceTime calls. Maybe they'll have more memory. Maybe they'll, I don't know. You know, the one thing wrong with the iPhone, you have faster processor perhaps, although I don't feel any lack of speed on the iPhone 4. The only thing wrong with the iPhone 4 is the yeah, and that was a, you know, it's a joint problem of AT&T and Apple. Apple clearly made a design mistake in putting the antenna outside. I mean, they may say other phones have problems, but it doesn't deny the fact that they have a severe problem with their phone. And Consumer Reports says so, and I say so, and that's obvious.
I do have that problem. Every once in a while I have to make a call or something somehow, and it gets dropped. You know,
I had to use the iPhone. You know, I was in France for a week, and I have a Verizon phone as my main phone, so I use the iPhone in France. By the way, left it in the hotel room, which is killing me. You know, I didn't use it for phone calls very much, so I don't know if it was better in France. But, you know, the truth is it's just not a great phone. It's a perfectly good smart device.
But
it's a very good smart device.
Leo, now, what's the chances that AT&T is going to switch over to a 4G network with that phone?
Possible. It's possible. They have, everybody's going to the next generation network. They call it 4G. Verizon's using LTE. I believe AT&T's plan is also to use LTE, although I'm not sure. But it's my guess, and I could be wrong, that this generation iPhone will not be a 4G iPhone.
Oh,
Apple's slow. Remember, the first iPhone was an edge-only phone.
I know. It's terrible.
Apple's very slow to adopt this. It's hard to say. You know, they may go to Verizon. I think the rumors are fairly strong and credible this time. We've heard these rumors for 3 years, but I think this time they're fairly credible that there will be a Verizon iPhone next year. The rumor also is it will not be a 4G phone for Verizon.
Yeah.
I suspect the iPhone 5 or whatever they call it will be have multiple radio bands. Will have the capability of doing both Verizon style and AT&T style phone access. That's CDMA and GSM.
I've noticed, Leo, that if you notice the commercials are running now, the other carriers, they're just running away with it, and AT&T's still behind. And I was reading reviews last night at Consumer Reports, and AT&T's still behind. The
biggest
carrier in the world. But they're still lagging behind in either network problems and other things as well, and customer service as well. When are they going to get together?
I tell you, you watch what happens if there is a Verizon iPhone.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot of jumping.
Yeah, I believe it. Hey, well, thanks a lot, Leo Frantz.
Yeah, I'm sorry. There's not better news. I think if you were going to say a new feature on the iPhone, it would sure be nice to have a faster data network, an LTE iPhone, whether it's LTE Verizon or LTE on AT&T. No one knows. I got to make this very clear. Anybody who speculates on this kind of stuff is making it up. We don't know what Apple's going to do. They don't telegraph it. They don't announce it. They don't tell anybody. They'll fire any employee that does. And I mean fire them. So anything we're saying is speculation, is rumor and speculation. But now, having said that, understand what I'm saying is speculative. I believe, yes, I think it's obvious there'll be a new iPhone. There is every year. Why wouldn't they do that? It'll come out, you know, in the spring, or at least be announced in the spring. I suspect that what you're going to see is an announcement in January. And I suspect that announcement will include a Verizon phone. I do not think, and the rumor mill seems fairly clear, that it will be either the AT&T or the Verizon iPhone, the next generation, will have 4G. I don't know what features you'd include to make it better, except maybe an antenna that worked better. Is it worth waiting? Yeah. It's always worth waiting, since we know it's going to happen, but you'll be waiting almost 6 months. So, you know, if you can live with your 3GS, I think the 3GS is a very good phone. I don't see any reason to dump it. In fact, I think it works a little bit better than the iPhone 4. Battery life on the iPhone 4 is better. Camera is much better. Screen's beautiful. So there are some real features, feature improvements on the iPhone 4. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. Let me mention our friends at Carbonite and then get to another call. And as I mentioned at 48 past the hour, the Gizwiz joins us, Dick DiBartolo. Matt in Ontario is coming up in a minute. He says his bigger monitor has a lower resolution than his smaller monitor. Why could that be? What's going on there? But I got to tell you about Carbonite. Carbonite online backup. It's backup done right. I put this on my daughter's computer. She's a laptop before she left. It's Mac or PC. She's got a Mac. She doesn't even have to know the backup's on there. It's just doing it. It's just backing up all the time whenever she's online. Automatic, that's important, and all backups should be automatic. You shouldn't have to think about it because, you know, if you have to think about it, you won't do it. But more than automatic, it does it to the cloud, to the internet, so you can get your data back even if that laptop has disappeared. You can go to the library, log into your Carbonite account, and there it is. It's always available to you, even with the 3 iPhone or BlackBerry app. I just love Carbonite. I know you will, too. I want you to try it free for 2 weeks. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo. If after you try it, you like it, use the name Leo again to buy, and you'll get 2 months free. You got to back it up to get it back, so do it right with Carbonite. Carbonite.com. Offer code Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Stay here now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Matt, Ontario, Canada. You're next. How you doing, Matt?
Hello, Leo.
Huge hello, fan. Matt.
Quick question for you. I had two 24-inch monitors, and I went out and bought my 27-inch Samsung, and I thought I'm going to get a little bit more real estate. And it turns out it's 1080, and all of them seem to be like that. And I'm wondering, is that the new trend, or should I go back and I just maybe try and find one that's got a higher resolution? Because I don't want to get a bigger...
You mean for your computer or for your TV?
No, it's for my computer. So my 24-inch has got 1920 by 1200. My 27 is 1920 by 1080.
Isn't that interesting?
So, and they all seem to be doing that. And I can't, even if I go and like get a 32 or 42-inch TV, we're still at the same resolution. So I don't know if that's a new trend or if I have to get like a specialty monitor nowadays. But in the past,
it is driven by, of course, the fact that high def television is 1080p. So you don't need more than 1080 to get high def, even on a computer monitor. What Samsung does, and I suspect this is what you got bit by, is they have two levels of monitor. They have a high end and they have a low end. And that, you know, they say, look, 27-inch monitor for $400. Wow, great deal, until you see the resolution. If you want the higher resolution or the higher quality monitor, you're going to spend considerably more money. So my suspicion is, I don't know, and Matt, I'll have to check around, but my suspicion is that's what bit you, was that there are two levels of Samsung, and you got the lower cost one, which, of course, had a slightly lower resolution. I don't know if that's necessarily a negative, but certainly something to pay attention to when you buy a monitor is what is the native resolution? And on an LCD, that's the only resolution you're going to use. Hey, thanks for the call. Nice to have listeners in Canada. I think probably Matt's listening on CHAM out of Waterloo, Ontario. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And guess who's here? He's the Daily Gizwiz, Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. Host of a daily podcast that we do on my network called The Daily Gizwiz. Hello, Dick.
Hey, bonjour, mon ami. Comme vous-tu?
Oh, ça va bien, tout. Très bien. We should talk like this the whole time.
I hope not. I have to thank Dennis for that. I was going to say, bonjour, mon ami.
Mon ami.
Comme for January 2.
You're not a francophone, I guess.
I'm not. No, yeah. I'm a headophone.
Headophone. Dick is a gadget hound from way back for many decades and is an expert on the all things electronic. What do you got for us today?
Well, you know what? I thought since you loved it so much and people really responded to this, I thought we would talk about probably the most bizarre gadget I found in 2010, the USB typewriter keyboard.
This is so wild.
This is wild. It's at usbkeyboard.com. So you have an old typewriter that you love typing on. You had it for 50 years and you don't like your IBM keyboard or your Mac keyboard. So this company will take an old typewriter, convert it so that it has a USB dongle on it. And now you can plug it into any USB device that requires a keyboard. And it can now be your keyboard. And I found it at the Wired store. And at the Wired store, they had it hooked up to the iPad.
It
so
is
I'm sitting
so
there
funny.
On this old, old Royal typewriter. And I'm typing on an iPad.
And now, keys move and it goes chunk, chunk, chunk and all
yes,
of that?
Exactly. It is a riot. Now, if you happen to be a wiring wizard, you can do it on the cheap.
They sell a kit for,
I think it was $59. And it said like 8 hours intensive soldering, yada, yada, yada. That's $59. If you send them a typewriter, takes about a month for them to do it. It's $3.99, or if you have endless funds, you can go on their website, find an old machine that they already have, and say, hey, take that machine and make it and give me a USB typewriter keyboard output on that, and that's $6.99.
You know what's neat is the guy started doing this on Etsy, which is the kind of the crafty website for people who sell things like knitted hats and stuff. And he was making these on Etsy.
Oh, that's it.
And selling them $400. He says, sorry, custom orders cannot be filled in time for Christmas. So
yeah,
but
yeah,
if he's got one done already, you may be able to get it for Christmas. It's a cool idea. Would you think you'd like to use it on a regular basis?
No, I don't like any, I fall in love with keyboards. You know, I'll find a keyboard that lights up this color. That's my keyboard of the day. I've been using the Luxeed for quite some time now because you can change colors. You can make rainbows. You can put on a light show.
Anything with LEDs, Dick loves it. It doesn't matter.
I'm like a cat, the cat with the laser thing. That's me.
Well, if you want to know more, USBtypewriter.com. They're not cheap. If you're handy with a soldering iron, you could make one yourself.
You can do it for $59.
Yeah, that is cheap. But you also have to find a typewriter.
Yes.
Yeah. Dick joins us every week to talk about gadgets. You can visit his website, gizwiz.biz, for the information on this and all his other crazy gadgets. And the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. How fun is that? Dick, we'll talk in a few minutes as we record the Daily Gizwiz this day. Thank you, Dick.
Okay, be here, pal.
All right. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Meanwhile, though, Paul in Westminster, California has a question. Hi, Paul. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, good afternoon, Leo. Thank you for taking my call. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, real good, thanks. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller here, and my wife and I are doing some Christmas shopping for our daughter, who doesn't seem to be able to use a Bluetooth earpiece very easily while she drives around in her auto, so we were considering, one of these in-car hands-free phone systems like a Jabra Cruiser 2, Plantronics K100, Motorola 325, and the like.
Just right.
What your expert advice might
be. Do you want one that plays through the stereo system, or do you want one that just sits on the visor and has its own speaker?
Well, it could be either, I guess. I don't know
if
what
she well, I use. I'll tell you what I use and I love. It's from a company called Blue Ant, and it sits on the visor.
Okay.
So it's a speakerphone. It's a lot easier, frankly.
Okay.
It's battery powered, so you charge it up. It has a micro USB connector on it, so it charges up. You plug it in. It's got its own speaker. Now the negative on all of these, of course, is that everybody in the car is going to hear the call. Unlike an earphone, there's no way, you can have privacy. But this really does a nice job, works with almost all phones, and I think the quality is excellent. Because it's on the visor, the microphone's very close to you, so the voice quality is excellent. And it does some neat things. For instance, it reads the phone book from your phone and will say who's calling.
Oh, okay.
It'll say, Paul is on the line, and you say, accept, and it picks it up. No buttons.
Okay.
You can say things like, Blue Ant, speak to me. And it gets ready for a voice command. So you could say, call Paul, and it'll do it. I think this is a really nice little device. Requires no modification to the car at all. This is what I use, and I'm very happy with it.
Okay. Appreciate
Blue, it.
Is it kind of in the same price range as those other ones that I...
Yeah, it's about $129, something like that.
Okay.
Blue Ant S4. Jabra's very good. I think the Jabras are good. Plantronics is good. There's one from a company called, I want to say Parrot, that plugs into, is that right? That plugs into the, it's the Parrot.com. This would be my, another good choice. And this one uses the car stereo for the speakers. Some people prefer that. Some people don't like it.
Okay.
That's Parrot.com if you want to learn more about that.
Okay. All right. Really.
Hey, thanks for the call.
On that, Leo. Thank you so much.
Happy holidays, Paul. Thank you. Yeah, I think for the next few weeks, that's pretty much the Tech Guy show is going to be helping you buy a gift for your geek. But that's okay. That's what I'm here for. Every weekend right here at this time on this station. If you want more information about the things I've mentioned on the show, we do have a website, techguylabs.com. You'll find links there to our great chat room, lovely people in there, and to the video that we stream, and to the podcast network, Twit, which is my day job. It's what I do the rest of the week, including the Daily Gizwiz, that five-day-a-week gadget roundup from Dick DiBartolo. That's all at twit.tv if you want to see all of our different podcasts. And live.twit.tv if you want to watch live as I do this show and all those other shows. We leave the cameras on pretty much 24/7. We've got now, I think, 20 different shows we do. Not just me, but my friends, Tom Merritt and Sarah Lane. We do a lot of stuff here. So twit.tv is the place to go if you want to know more, if you're really geeky and you want to get down with your geek self. Thanks for being here. Have a great week, and I will see you next time. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week.